But one of the biggest reasons why I think horses struggle around new objects are getting close to new objects and walking over new objects and obstacles and things like that is a lot of them still don't trust the feel and the pressure, and they feel trapped in the rider's pressure, which means they feel that they don't have enough, you know, processing ability left to process an obstacle softly, touch it softly, withdraw from it softly, things like that. So a lot of horses feel a little trapped, as I say, within the boundaries of pressure, which means if you were going to walk into a house with someone a little dangerous, you would want to know where the back, where the front door that you just walked in is right there behind you, so you can immediately leave. You're not going to walk to the back of the room and have them in the way.
Hello, welcome to Mark Langley's Horsemanship Podcast, a podcast helping people to understand their horses better, to provide solutions in a calm, connected way. I'm Jenny Barnes.
And I'm Mark Langley.
In today's podcast, Mark is going to share his tips on how to pick up a left canter lead and how to help a horse get more confident at siding up to an obstacle. Let's start with the obstacles. We're talking about gates, barrels, mounting blocks, poles, anything like that. But can I ask you first, Mark, what makes it hard for some horses to get up close to an object?
Like anything, there's horses that are wary of new things. You know, if you put a new bucket, or if there's a bucket that was left in the paddock that wasn't there the day before, they're quite wary of it. So there's always some horses have a natural awareness of new things that they're not sure about. But one of the biggest reasons why I think horses struggle around new objects, getting close to new objects and walking over new objects and obstacles and things like that, is a lot of them still don't trust the feel and the pressure, and they feel trapped in the rider's pressure, which means they feel that they don't have enough, you know, processing ability left to process an obstacle softly, touch it softly, withdraw from it softly, things like that. So a lot of horses feel a little trapped, as I say, within the boundaries of pressure, which means if you were going to walk into a house with someone a little dangerous, you would want to know where the back, where the front door that you just walked in is right there behind you, so you can immediately leave. You're not going to walk to the back of the room and have them in the way. So a lot of horses, when we ride them, they feel that there's not enough room to withdraw away from something. So they're becoming more scared of it. Then it feels like they're constantly trying to withdraw away from all the obstacles and bounce off them. Okay, so the biggest thing we can sort of do around any obstacles is have the horse have a strong ability for the horse to be able to sort of move away from the object and move back to the object. You've got to always show the horse that you can take them away from the object, and then you'll gently help them think back to the object, and then eventually they start to think up to the object themselves. It's when we trap them and make them go to objects that we have a lot of problems. But the other thing also is we have to, in a new environment with lots of obstacles, the horses are on more high alert. And usually if you take your horse to other places with different obstacles, there might be other horses around. So basically the horse is trying to process all the horse dynamics that are going on, plus all the new obstacles. And it's a lot to deal with. So basically they're going to stay safe and not kind of go near things that they're a bit unsure of, especially when there's other horse action going around that they need to sort of assess and process. So, you know, you're going to stay in a safe place where there's plenty of room to move and be safe if you are threatened.
So it's almost like it's against their natural instinct to go up to something, and it's even worse when there's a lot going on. All right, so you know a little bit about obstacles. Not many people know this, but you spent some time over in Scotland, and while you were there, they just happened to have, there's a competition that is in Europe called La Trek. It's a ridden course over quite a large area, and it involves orienteering and different paces, and it also involves going through a whole load of obstacles at a certain pace. And they had the British Championships and the Scottish Championships while you were there, and someone lent you a horse that you had not trained, not even ridden, I think, and of course you came placed in both of those championships, so you did really well on a horse that hadn't done a lot. So obviously there's something that you know about obstacles and all this. So the question that we're going to hit you with today is from Megan. She says, what's the best way to help her horse be confident to pull up next to things? So what her horse is doing is veering away from them, as you commented on, and then they end up doing circles, but always away from the obstacle.
Okay, so when you come up near the obstacle, the biggest thing, firstly, Megan, is when you're riding, that the horse is comfortable at trusting and following each one of your reins, okay? So, you know, when you pick up a left rein, the horse looks and travels to the left and lets go of that right thought and vice versa. So if the horse is trusting and following the rein, then you come up near an obstacle. So there's a bit of a, like, I'll tell this little story for everyone before I start answering your question, but it's I try and sort of demonstrate like a scenario where the horses see us as a leader. So basically just put this sort of, you know, story in your head. If you want to close your eyes, just listen to it. So you're riding along, you're riding up a trail on your horse, and it's a horse, it's, you know, there's a few things out there that's going to bother it a little bit, but there's a big puddle coming up, and the horse in its mind says, holy cow, there's a big something or up there, I hope I don't fall through the earth to China or something like that. And the horse doesn't know what it is, so it's quite frightened. Now, you feel a slight hesitation in your horse, and you know the horse has a little concern in that so-called thing coming up. You know it's a puddle, you know it's okay, but the horse doesn't. It sees it as something that it just doesn't understand. So you've got a choice. That's your first choice when you come up to something new. And this mare of yours, and I know her, she probably hasn't had a chance ever to make a choice, and nobody's ever given her leadership that she said thanks. It's always been make a do. So she's never been able to trust a person around new and scary objects. So that first choice is your first choice of being a good leader or not, okay? So the first choice, as the horse starts to hesitate, you know the horse is going, I'm concerned. So right at that moment of concern, I'd pick up maybe a left or right rein and I'd say, yeah, let's just steer away from that for a second. And the horse goes, oh, good on you. I was just about to do that if I took three more steps. Okay. Because if you force the horse when it hesitated a few more steps, the next thing it's going to do is go left or right and go, I don't want to go towards it. So you make a decision to steer that horse away from it, and the horse goes, I was just about to do that, so I like your leadership, we're on the same page. And then as the horse gets away from the obstacle a bit, it starts to breathe out and go, oh, that was good, I just dealt with that. And then you turn it back and sort of have a look at it. And usually when a horse veers away from something scary, a lot of times their curious side comes out and they go, what was that I was scared of? And they'll turn and look. So the next thing you do is say, let's go and have another look. So you turn and just let the horse look at it. Might snort a bit, might go, what's that? But basically the two things that you did with the horse is you said, I notice you're concerned. I'm just going to steer you away from that because that's the next thing you'd probably choose. So the horse followed your leadership into a good feeling. And then the next thing would have probably done is turned and looked at what it was scared of, which you did. You helped it turn and have another look. Second scenario, you ride the horse, you feel hesitation, but in your mind you just felt the horse slowing down because you didn't notice that the horse would have been scared of a puddle. And you squeezed the horse and the horse said, oh, I was a bit nervous. I needed time to know I could withdraw from that just in case it's a monster. But you said, there's no withdrawal out of this. Just go forward with the legs. So the horse, that was your first chance of good leadership, and your good leadership said, no, keep going. So the horse said, oh, I wouldn't have done that. I would have just moved off a little. Next scenario, the horse gets closer and it chooses to go, you're a bad leader. You're leading us into something that could be very dangerous. I'm going to go to the left or right. So basically the horse ended up going left or right. It's just that it chose to do it instead of you choosing to take the horse off to the left or right to make it feel safe. Now, if you make a good choice and you teach the horse, well, ever you're under your guidance, we can always withdraw away from something scary and then come back. The horse knows there's a back door open just in case it is a monster. And by having the back door open, the horse's natural curiosity will grow and strengthen. By having the back door closed, the horse's curiosity naturally diminishes and it feels trapped between a back door closed and a monster in front of it. So by showing the horse that you can open the back door for it, people might say, oh, but then the horse is going to bolt. And it's like, well, once that horse is scared enough, it'll bolt no matter how much you try and jam that door against it. Okay, so it's about teaching the horse to become curious and giving it guidelines. So the next thing you do after this, and this is where you come in, that your question is going to come into play a little bit more about how I approach those scary things. I create an imaginary, well, no, sorry, I don't do it. The horse creates an imaginary kind of bubble around the obstacle. And one eye, the fascinating thing with some horses, I've come across horses that will bounce like 50 meters away on one side. And when you turn them and their other eye's on the obstacle, they'll actually suck in towards it in curiosity. And then you put the other eye on it and they'll blow out 50 meters again. So the boundary on each eye is very different. So the thing I try and create when I'm walking up to an obstacle is I place the horse one eye on, find out how that eye deals with the obstacle, and I walk the horse, and that natural bubble on a loose rein will push the horse out away from the obstacle. Then when the horse is pushed out a little and it feels safe, you'll turn the horse back in towards the obstacle and walk a straight line. As you feel the bubble pushing your horse, it'll just push out a little bit. And then when the horse goes out, you'll turn back in again. But slowly what ends up happening is you're exposing the horse to one eye on, two eyes on. The horse can bow out a little bit if it feels a little unsafe. So there's still a withdrawal away from the obstacle. But just about every time I've done this with horses to get them curious and being able to like walk up and sniff an obstacle, they'll just the boundary every time you swap eyes, so you go one eye on, two eyes on, one eye on as you're doing this process. So it's basically sort of tacking backwards and forwards. But as you're tacking backwards and forwards, the horse is exposed a lot to all positions on that obstacle. And even I would actually turn away from the obstacle sometimes, so the horse has been positioned with its rump to the obstacle, so it's been in all positions with that obstacle in that area. But as you're tacking backwards and forwards, the horse actually breaks down the boundary. And then every now and again, when you feel the horse getting curious, it'll want to start to look, you let it tip in. And I've had horses tack. I remember a horse at a clinic quite distinctly because I was tacking. It's that whole end of the arena really scared it. And I was just tacking and it just got a little close. And all of a sudden, it looked at the end of the arena. I just dropped the rein on it and it walked all the way to the fence where it was scared and looked around and sniffed, and then it went, I'm okay now, I've done that. So by tacking, in most cases, I've had a lot of horses just start to become a lot more curious and they take you the rest of the distance and sniff the obstacle. Where it's good in creek crossings and stuff like that is you're not pointing the horse and saying go straight across. You're letting it tack from side to side so they can take a side angle onto a creek crossing, and that encourages them not to jump and just be a little bit more cautious as they go down. So that just helps them adjust to go up and sniff the obstacle and things like that. But by also putting the horse in many, many different positions, you're actually positioning the horse later on to be able to sidle over to an obstacle. So they've been positioned, you know, because some people just work on the two eyes on, walk straight up. But then as soon as the horse gets on the side, it blows away. So it's super important that the tacking process, that you, when you've walked up to your obstacle, you can actually walk past it and there's no bubble around the obstacle, whatever direction you're coming from or going away from the obstacle. So you just keep tacking to different obstacles, and maybe your first obstacle course, don't go and test every single obstacle. Just go and see if you can get your horse to walk around them and just sniff them and then walk away to another one and just get them confident in being around the obstacles and then let them start to explore.
Can I ask you, because sometimes I see people getting off their horse and leading their horse to the obstacle to let them sniff it, and then they walk away, then they come back under saddle and go up to the obstacle. Does it matter, like, you know, if you were to do it on the ground, does that then translate under saddle, or is it that actually the horse needs to do it with you under saddle as well?
Well, the thing with leading horses, it puts a leader out in front of the horse, and a lot of horses will follow a horse through a gateway, but they won't take the herd through a gateway.
Right.
So if you get off, it might get you. Yes, it helps the horse more than not doing anything. But a lot of horses don't lead themselves, and when you ride a horse, you're behind their eyes. So you're following your horse. Whereas when you get off and lead the horse, you're showing the horse, I can take you to the scary thing. Now, if that horse accepts the scary thing and sniffs it while you've helped it up to it, and then you get on it and the horse goes, I'm okay with that now, that's fine. And you've helped the horse maybe address the obstacle, but you haven't helped the horse become a good leader. So when you get to a new environment, the horse has to learn to lead you to the obstacle. So it might help you for that particular obstacle on that day and that particular obstacle on that day, but it won't necessarily teach your horse to lead themselves to obstacles, you know. So it doesn't help them lead through new environments. It just helps them address that obstacle.
All right, and I have another final question then. So if you've coming up to the obstacle and you're wanting to get your horse closer to it, and so that sort of idea of steering them into it, moving them over, however you're going to move them over into it, but they're obviously not happy and they're wanting to edge away, but you're putting that pressure on them to get them closer, that's only going to decrease their confidence by what you're saying. You should actually just wait until they make the decision themselves.
Yeah. Now, there's a within reason sort of part of this whole scenario. So if everyone just listened to everything I said just then, they'll think every time I go to a new object, I just wait and let the horse go up to it. There's a point in training we can expect things of our horses. But the problem is what I'm seeing as a clinician helping kind of broken, a lot of broken horses, is I'm seeing a lot of horses that they don't trust the reins, they don't trust the legs, they don't trust a whole bunch of things, but then they must do something. So there's all that friction in there. There's a point where you say you need to walk up to that gate now and it's not going to bite. But you get to a point in your training when the horse trusts your decisions that it will actually do something for you, though it's a little concerned about what that is, but you've never let it into danger, okay? But too early, if you force your horse to things and something goes wrong, or the obstacle clatters, or the mud's too muddy or whatever, they panic and they'll never trust you again. So you've got to teach them to be able to explore and sniff and process the things that you're walking across. But then there's a time in your training when you get to that competition or you're sort of going to the next level that you say, trust me, I'm not going to put you in a fire and I'm not going to, you know, and then they go, okay, I trust following this without having enough processing time because I'm so comfortable with this guidance. I'm not worried about all the things around me.
Right, because you've built up to that point by listening to them.
Yeah, you can't just go and say, oh, you just wait a bit here and that. There's a point where the horse actually puts more trust in your leadership. But as I said before, those early process of rehabilitating sort of horses that have learnt not to trust people, and also the green horses that you want to build confidence up, you're building a good trusting you're building a horse's trust in our leadership. So you make certain decisions. And as those decisions evolve and the horse gets more confidence, then we have to change the way we're training a little bit to start to say, now, can I ask for something and have it now? Because everything I'm doing, you've done before. But can you do it on time? And that's where we go with training. But unfortunately, everyone's wanting that first.
Oh, yeah. Okay, makes sense to me. Great. All right, we'll move on to the next question. It's all about being under saddle as well. It's from Carrie. And she says, Mark, can you please talk through some exercises to help her horse Fergie pick up the left canter lead? Currently, Fergie's thinking left, and then so Carrie asks for a canter, and then her horse thinks right and canters on the right lead. So it takes about 1 to 3 strides before the canter is struck after she's asking. She knows there's a lack of confidence on the left lead, but she has been working on it on the ground, and she can get the left lead about 90 to 95% of the time, and the confidence is growing.
Awesome. So the good thing is you've tried to assess if the horse is cantering left and right on a left and right lead on the ground. The first thing, Carrie, I'd think about, and knowing Fergie, and I might give people a little bit of history, Fergie was very sensitive in the rib cage, so she was kind of a horse that could seem very cold back, blow up a little bit under pressure, any leg pressure, anything like that. She could be quite distressed about. And then she also went through a soreness phase where there was areas in there that kind of really kind of made her twitchy. So it's for everyone that's sort of getting to the canter lead stage, it's not about just thinking what exercises can I do to get a canter lead. It's what could be causing the problem to make the horse fire on one lead more than the other, okay? And the most common problem I come across, and because of Fergie's history, that then I'd say there's still this common problem still probably lies in there somewhere, is when you put a feel of a leg and say step up into that canter, it creates a certain worry in a horse, and that certain worry will put your horse to its dominant eye all the time. So a lot of horses, when they get worried, there's more of a focus eye that they kind of look through and they kind of destinate out of a bit more. And as soon as there's a certain brace or worry come in the horse, the imbalance gets stronger. So you can do a lot of exercises getting a horse kind of thinking left, going good, getting ready to sort of strike that lead. But as soon as you put that pressure on and say squeeze up to canter, all that preparation in setting the horse up flies out the window because of the worry about the legs, for instance. And then all of a sudden the horse is back to worry, think to its through its strongest eye or something like that. So my first port of call, Carrie, would be to just go away from the idea of, well, no, think about the idea of canter, but just go for a trail ride on it. Just go out and just ride her, okay? Find a road somewhere, find somewhere she knows that she travels nice and she's just, you know, out riding. And just go back through to teach her and go through all the little leg things, the walk up, the come back, slow walk up, come back, slow walk, jog, stand, jog out, slow down, jog up, and do about an hour's ride where you're just kind of bringing her back, squeezing her up, going until she's just going, this is lovely, just squeezing forward to the legs and just going forward and coming back. And you know, I don't know how many transitions you'll sort of practice there, and just get her going up and coming back, and until it doesn't matter which way you've got that rein loose. And this is before even the canter starts. When you press that squeeze, she comes out nice and smooth, and she's not wiggling left or right when you squeeze her. And I center my reins and give the horse a loose rein and say, are you going to be biased when I squeeze your rib cage? And I want to see if there's any bias in him when I squeeze their rib cage. If there's any bias before the canter, then I'm just gonna keep working on that until they get good at it. So after half an hour, 40 minutes of just traveling along, just she's gonna go, these legs are okay, it's fine. And then if you can find a track somewhere like where there's no real direction she has to go, it's just a set direction. All you do is you just get to the canter and you just go, right, now squeeze to canter. Thanks for that. Now come back and do a few transitions in within the trot, like slow trot, jog, up a bit, and then back to slow jog, and then just fire another canter, and then just fire another canter. And if you did half an hour just riding along, just canter transition, come back to just a jog and a walk and then a little canter transition on a loose rein, just see if she's firing left or right, see if she's kind of biased and getting worried until the worry goes to the canter. When the worry disappears in the canter, then we can talk about setting up the body position and the mind position to get the right canter lead every single moment. But I get the sneaky feeling that she just needs more time in the leg up, come back, leg up, come back, okay? Now, if you've done that separately and then you go back to the arena or the area where you're sort of trying to get a lead and canter a bit of a circle or whatever, go back to that same principle you had out when you were just cruising around, just back and back and up and back until she's going, yeah, I can step up to canter, and then just set the thought up in the right spot, whether that be, think left, and canter left and get that left lead and see how she goes. And I reckon you might find she'll start to kind of step off to the left or right. The other thing also is in getting her more comfortable with the legs, because you've done a fair bit of rein work with her already and you've already got some pretty good rein yields happening where she can start to soften, go sideways with the reins, then I think it's important now to start introducing the leg yields to her so she can start to leg yield her. So with your right leg, you place it back a little bit and get her to yield off your right leg and go left, and then vice versa, left leg and go right. I think it's important that you get good acceleration, and then you also teach her that you can gently leg yield. So set up your rein yield so she knows how to think right and think left. Get her travelling, make sure there's no resistance in her travelling right and left, and then just start to add leg and say, I'm going to leg yield you a little bit, and I'm going to leg yield you the other way, just so she gets comfortable at the fact that you can leg yield, get her thinking in that direction with a bit of a sideways movement. There's a whole bunch of other exercises that you can do, you know, getting the wither moving across a little bit so the hips set up in a certain way and things like that. But I would say comfort in acceleration without the responsibility of left or right lead. And I reckon after a while she'll just start to throw random leads all the time, just left or right, doesn't matter. She'll just choose one, see how that goes. And then getting her more comfortable in the leg yielding, because we've been doing a lot of rein yielding and accelerating with the legs, it might be a good time to start to say now we can start to leg yield her so she's more comfortable with direction in the legs as well. And that can, for later on, for more advancement later, that's going to help her.
Okay, and the last question for today is from Carla from Germany. She says, do you believe horses get bored of the same routine? She's heard mixed opinions.
It's a tricky one to answer that one, because it's I found an open, thoughtful horse that goes towards its thoughts and is actively thinking tends to be more interested and stay more in the conversation more. So the first thing is a lot of horses get sour, sappy, bored, resentful, all that sort of stuff when they're just moving away from pressure and they're not going towards the thoughts. That's the first rule of thumb. So I would say you don't have a lot of, happy time on a horse when they're just robotic and doing circles and moving away from pressure. So they start the lesson already not wanting to be there. So it's just a question of how long can they put up with the pressure before they buck you off, I suppose. It's just they're so focused and worried about the pressure. They don't have time to get bored with those worried horses. They just tap out a bit. Okay, so when a horse is thoughtful and thinking, to get them to hold their concentration longer and not be bored is I try and make everything a little more of a tactile. Tactile is like touchy, like it's almost like a circle. Like an example is a circle is like an endless straight line. Oh, deja vu, deja vu, deja vu, over and over and over till the horse just goes, oh, this is... So with young horses that I'm trying to get ready to do some circles, I'll go and say, left turn, oh, new direction, shiny thing, oh, let's back up here and go over here. So everything has a reason and a purpose. So the horse is constantly searching and seeking, so there's less chance for them to get bored. And then also what I look at is once the horse is good at turning and doing all these little things, then you might do one circle and the horse does a really good circle because it knows how to steer. So all the things that you're doing, you're trying to make it a little like little changes in it. And I do that just to keep the horse ticking and thinking and more adjustable. So I'm doing it to get them more adjustable, but also being adjustable and interested and going towards their thoughts. There's less time for just being bored. The thing about listening to us all the time, as I said before, there's not enough time to be bored on a horse that's kind of, in the conversation. But if you're doing the same old repetition pattern over and over and over, they start to do it themselves. And I think they just dull out. And that's when that boredom sets in. So they just start to fade out on us. But I think every horse is different. There's so much going on in different environments and stuff in horses that, a horse can stand under a tree for hours on hours. They don't suffer boredom like people as much, I don't think. It's more so the just tapping out, dulling out. I think still we have to have them in a mindset thinking that maybe I shouldn't do the same repetition in case they just get bored doing it over and over and over.
Okay. Thank you very much, Mark. There were some great answers there and I hope you enjoyed listening. We'll talk to you again soon.
Thanks, Jenny. Thanks, everybody.
If you've enjoyed this podcast, don't forget to follow it or share it. You've been listening to Australia's very own Mark Langley, a horseman with many insights from his decades of dabbling. Jump online to keep learning. marklangley.com.au